Heather Keller joined me on the podcast today. She was diagnosed with stage 1 triple positive invasive ductal carcinoma at the end of 2015. Heather shares her journey from finding her lump to diagnosis to treatment and into recovery. She talks about creating an award-winning international touring solo show called Chemo Barbie about her breast cancer journey. Take a listen in as Heather shares her story. Welcome to Behind the Pink Ribbon, where we share stories, information, and other content related to breast cancer. My name is Melissa Adams. I am a 12-year genetic breast cancer survivor. I've learned so much through my own journey with breast cancer. I have met some amazing people along the way, many that have become lifelong friends. I have experienced the emotional roller coaster of a breast cancer diagnosis, heartache, anger, frustration, loneliness, and even gratitude. Through this podcast, we will speak to breast cancer survivors, supporters, and healthcare professionals to gain insight and understanding behind the pink ribbon. Welcome to the show, Heather. It's so nice to have you.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's nice to be here.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about your story and kind of where it started. You know, if you were having a mammogram, if you were doing a self-check, you know, found a lump, like whatever. Where did it all happen for you? Where did it start?
So for me, I had my annual, like a physical once a year. So I was just checking my boobs before the physical and I was like, oh, I feel something. It's probably just another cyst because I've had cystic boobs my whole life. And so I went to my physical, my doctor felt it and she was like, oh, we can just probably drain that. I'm sure it's nothing. But, you know, it was right around the holidays. It was December 18th of 2015. So I was like, I want to, you know, is there a way I can get like a mammogram and an ultrasound right away so that I can just get on with the holidays and not have this like hang over me and ruin my holidays?
Yeah.
And so I went across the hall, which is like the mammogram RadNet facility, and like someone canceled, you know. So I went over, had that done, and then they were like, this is something. You're going to have a biopsy. And then it started from there.
Oh, no.
Like, yeah. It was right for the hospital. My actual biopsies, I went somewhere, my actual City of Hope Hospital in LA, for the biopsies and everything. So they did everything again over there. But so I went there on December 24th.
Oh, no.
Yeah, Christmas Eve. And then I found out the 27th that it was cancer.
Oh my
and then
gosh.
I met with my oncologist on New Year's Eve for 4 hours. Like just because he's a great, you know, patient, very patient person. I was not having the fact that I had cancer.
Yeah. I mean, that's a really long appointment. But yeah. I mean, you know, I'm thinking back to, you know, kind of what you said where like you've had cystic breasts and, you know, you've had other scans previously and, you know, everything's kind of turned out. So you were anticipating that was going to be the same.
Yeah. I had a bad experience at the RadNet facility just because, you know, they have a lot of people and everyone's trying to get their stuff done before the new year because of insurance and things. So they were really busy and it was the end of the day and they had like a nurse, like a trainee in there. And then the woman doing the ultrasound and they're not supposed to say anything. You know what I mean? They're not supposed to say anything. And she's like, just feel that, touch it. And like this woman who I don't even know, you know, is like, she's the trainee is like poking it and they're like training her. I didn't know at the time, but to feel what cancer felt like. And then when the radiologist woman came in, she was like, well, we need to do a biopsy. And I was like, what? I was just here. And like, it was like 2011, I think. So it had been years previous. I said, you must be confusing my charts with someone else. She's like, no, we compared them. And no, it's not the same as the thing that you had in 2011 that went away. It was just a cyst. And it was a nightmare. And then I was like, well, you have to do it now. You know, get this out. And she's like, it's the end of the day. It's a holiday week. So it was like Friday the 18th and like Christmas was the week after. It ultimately like turned out to be a good thing that I didn't get my biopsies there, but she was like, well, you know, you really, I was like, are you sure it's something? And you really think so? And she's like, well, I wouldn't want that in me.
Oh my gosh.
Like, oh my God.
Not to send up any alarms or red flags at all, but
I know.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
So I called a friend of mine who had gone through this. I had babysat her kids years ago. I called her from the RadNet facility and I was like, oh my God, they think it might be cancer. And so she told me to go to this specific doctor at City of Hope. And so I showed.
I mean, not that I'm glad that your friend had cancer, but I'm glad that you had somebody that you could call that could refer you to somebody who was going to do maybe a little bit better of a job.
She actually never had, this is the doctor that figured out that it wasn't cancer. They tried to diagnose her as breast cancer and it turned out it was this cell that mimics it.
Oh, wow.
She lucked out, but it took like 3 months for them to figure it out. So that's why she was like, you have to go see him. You have to go see him. And that's where my journey started.
Wow. I mean, like welcome 2016. Like, yes. You know, I mean, not quite the celebration, and especially on New Year's Eve. Good grief. Oh, like, I didn't even know that they were open on New Year's Eve.
I know, right? Most places aren't. It's the hospital. It's a special cancer hospital. And that's why I think I was able to get in, because I showed up. My friend, she was like, I don't know. I ended up there anyway. She's like, show up at the front door of the hospital. Like, just show up. I did. My husband drove me and they were like, we need your charts in the RadNet facility. So we drove back to Burbank and like,
oh my gosh, like,
we got that, drove back to the hospital. And I was like, I have to get this out if it's anything. I was determined.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, genuinely, like, you would absolutely have to be determined. But, you know, I'm sure that you also were scared shitless, quite honestly, because somebody told you that she would not want that inside of her. So,
yeah, she's like, I've been doing this for 10 years and I have seen and I know that that's cancer. And she's not supposed to say that.
No.
At all. They're not supposed to say anything.
No. I mean, I couldn't get my rad on or the radiologist to say a word to me. I mean, I knew because she kept like stroking my hair and telling me how young and beautiful I was, and that we were going to get through this, but you know, she didn't say cancer.
That's frightening.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they give clues. If you're paying close enough attention, they do give clues. The whole, like, I've had a couple of people on the podcast who have said like, oh yeah, you know, that person told me, or the tech told me, or, you know, whomever. I'm like, oh, that's a big no-no.
Yeah. When I told my main doctor about it, like my normal, like my, what is that? Your general practitioner.
Yeah.
He actually contacted the facility to let them know. Cause she knows the woman that runs the facility.
Oh, wow.
And they had a talking to with the HIPAA standards or whatever, like the, I don't know. You're not supposed to release, you're not supposed to tell people things like it's.
Yeah. And she didn't have the test results back yet either. So, you know, there's always that chance that you might think it is, but it's not. Oh my gosh. And so, you know, it was stage one invasive ductal. So what did they tell you what size the tumor was?
Yeah, it took, ultimately, when I had the surgery, it came out at 1.4.
Okay.
Right before 1.5. So I was triple positive. So I was able to actually, we wanted to have kids too, and we hadn't started yet. So I had to have it removed before I could do fertility. So we did fertility treatments right after. So I had that removed, but it was 1.5 basically, ultimately.
So did you do, because it was triple positive, did you have to do like the Herceptin treatments first and then do like, or do they,
no.
I don't know what the process is, to be quite honest with you. Sometimes I know there's chemo first and then there's surgery and then there's Herceptin or there's, you know, I know there's a longer process.
I did have the option to shrink it first, but then it could affect my fertility.
Oh, got it. Okay.
So we did this, we chose to do, since it was small enough, they basically did like a reconstruction of my boob with my own tissue from my, under my arm.
So did you do a mastectomy?
Is in my boob. What?
Did you do a mastectomy?
No, I did a lumpectomy with partial mastectomy with my own tissue. Okay. So they cut that the tumor, and then they replaced it with tissue under my armpit. So that's now in there. And then,
I have never heard that before.
Oh, really?
Not once.
Yeah.
They took, I mean, what's in your armpit? Like, I'm like feeling mine, and I'm like, where, what's in there?
Like, I didn't know they did it either. I was like, how come it hurts so much under my arm? And he's like, oh, that's because we refilled your breast with your arm tissue. It's breast tissue. So it's like, right. Like if you look at your armpit, it's like right below your armpit. Okay.
Yeah.
Right in there. They rebuilt it with that.
So it's like that flappy part that hangs out over your bra. Is that what it is? I mean, you don't have it. What it is, right? It's the flappy part that hangs out over my bra. Why the hell didn't they take that from me?
You know, everyone is so different. I had so many options. I remember looking at them being like, these all suck. All these options are bad.
That's true. They do suck.
So I said, so I have to choose the best of the least suckiest of the sucky options. And they're like, yes.
Okay. Yeah. I'm so just like, me, I'm like looking at myself and I'm like grabbing that. Yeah. Like, you know, I didn't realize that was, I don't know what I thought that was.
Honestly. You had a double, well, you know, you had genetics, right? You have a genetic gene.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I did the bilateral mastectomy. So yeah there's not enough hanging over from the armpit to rebuild anything. So, but I've never heard that before. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah. It was painful. That really hurt.
Oh, I bet.
Because so I said, oh, thank you. So you made me a little thinner on that side then. And they're like, yes. Okay. Yeah. Because my genetics came back clean, it was literally the day before my surgery, my genetics came back completely clean. So I don't have any cancer markers. So I was able to do a lumpectomy with the port insertion. And then I had lymph nodes taken out, but I was able to keep my ovaries and I was able to keep my ovaries, which was the biggest concern with the genetics.
Sure.
Cause I was old. If anything came back, they said, because you're, well, they recommend for 45 and under to have your ovaries removed right away. So luckily, that was the good news, was, okay, I can keep my ovaries, I can do a lumpectomy, I can do fertility treatments, make embryos, then start chemo and Herceptin, which is it's a 13-month treatment plan. So it's a lot. It's a lot. And so it ended in February of 2017. Ultimately, my port was removed then. Wow. My last that month. So it's a lot to go through.
I mean, that genuinely is a long process. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know again that triple positive, it's more, you know, there's just so much more that's involved when it's triple positive. But yeah, wow.
It used to be the most deadly. And now because of the discovery of Herceptin, it's become the most treatable,
right?
But it does travel, and you know, the treatment is not easy.
When
I say it travels, I don't know. I mean, you know what that means, but like it causes the cancer to travel quickly.
Right.
Yeah. With that gene.
Their little cancer cells are like, well, there's a party over here in a different neighborhood. Let's go.
Yes. We're going to go everywhere.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Let's pick some people up along the way. Oh, good grief. So,
it's a lot.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And so you did do the fertility preservation.
Yes, we did. We did that.
Okay. I mean, I just recently had somebody on that talked about fertility preservation, and I did not do it, but it sounds like a not fun process, to be quite honest. So did you have success with it?
I did. I did. We were able to get 12 eggs. And then we basically, out of that, we were able to get 3 embryos. So the other ones were either, the eggs were too ripe, they said. So silly.
Sorry.
Because I go at it, like, not the most opportune time, but because I was in between a surgery for the cancer and then I had to start chemo at a certain point, I had to go.
Right.
Like, meaning they had to start the process of stabbing yourself in the stomach for like 10 days with needles and stuff. You do all of that, and then you hope for the best. And so I was lucky I had 12 eggs, but if I had gone a little later, a little earlier, meaning gone, meaning putting the needles in my stomach, I could have maybe had a few more, but I'm lucky I have three that are healthy. And it was a process. It's hard because when you hear, like, I wanted to visit the embryos, you know, I was, can I visit them? But they're microscopic. Aww. Just, you feel kind of maternal. I didn't expect that. I felt so maternal toward these 12 eggs. And then they fertilized them with my husband's sperm. And then, so they were growing, you know, and I'm like, can I visit them? And then along the process of growing, some of them pass away. They arrest, is what it's called. And then I ended up with the three healthy ones and they're frozen. And I call it frozen daycare.
Okay.
They're hanging out in frozen daycare. All right. Thriving.
Yeah. And so, they're just kind of sitting there waiting for you to basically decide when and if that time is good for you.
Yes.
Okay.
So I have to do tamoxifen for 5 years.
Oh, yes.
So once that's done, I'll probably be able to either carry the child myself or we would do a surrogate. I was hoping to be able to carry the child myself, but there's always dangers with that.
Yeah.
Because a cancer cell could form again and then grow.
Right. Yeah. And that's, that is one of the things that, you know, in my book, I actually do have a post that, or not a post. It's not a digital book, although I suppose it is. But you know, within my book, there is a, part in there where I talk about that. You know, I just kind of talk about finding a surrogate because it is kind of scary to think about, like, you know, you've gone through all of this stuff and, you know, if you're ER positive, you know, the cancer fuels off of that estrogen. And right. When you're pregnant, you know, your body's super
creating.
Yeah. Hormonal and lots of estrogen flying around. I think it's a hard thing to figure out, quite honestly. And I think everybody's different, but I was not married at the time. I didn't even have a significant other, but I was thinking about those things, like, you know, would I be able to have a baby? Would somebody want to carry it for me? And, there's a lot of decision-making that has to go on with that.
And it's things that you didn't ever think you'd have to think about.
No.
That's what. They were saying, oh, you have a great uterus. You're so fertile. I'm like, wonderful, but my boobs are trying to kill me. So.
Yeah, exactly. You're like, well, good. Yo, yay, uterus. I don't even know.
From the waist down, I'm fine, but that's up, right. Forget it.
At this point, I don't even know where is fine. Like from the chin up. Yeah. Everything else is, you know, questionable. Sorry.
No, it's so, I mean, you have to laugh because if you don't, I was crying at the time, you know,
but oh, now, yes.
Oh, it's crazy.
Yeah, it truly is. It truly is. So did you have to do radiation as well? Like, I'm trying really hard not to, I feel like we could go down this rabbit hole of a lot of humor. I don't know if our listeners are good for that.
I know, that's true, yeah. I did 5 weeks of radiation, so I did 4 weeks of like the regular blast, and then the fifth week was a boost.
Oh, yeah.
Just where the tumor was. Yeah, and then I ended up, my ribs cracked because I'm very small on top, and so I ended up with a broken rib and a hole in my rib, and they had to biopsy it to make sure it wasn't metastatic cancer, so... You know, it's like the journey never ends.
Right. You're like,
yeah, radiation. And I was like, I'm having so much pain. It was just horrible pain. And my doctor finally was like, okay, let's just do a bone density scan. And then it showed up with a hole on my rib. And, that's where they did the biopsy. And luckily it's healed now, but it took a long time because after radiation, everything is like, you know, your DNA is kind of messed up and the cells are slower to do things. So it took a long time for that to heal. So it was a lot of pain.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So wait, they had to like biopsy, like I, so biopsy is one of those things that it's like an instant trigger for me. I'm like, ooh, definitely shudder on the biopsies. But they had to, like, they were biopsying like the bone.
I had a bone biopsy. Yeah. Yeah. I actually,
sorry, I get a deep breath on that one.
I was like, you know what? I'm going to put a lot of makeup on. I did a video. I did a little video. Okay, I kept a video journal. So I look at the makeup I have on and it's obscene. I was like, I have to make a positive thing out of this, because if this is metastatic cancer, this is a whole different level of, it's forever. And I mean, it is forever already, but this is just, you know, it was scary. And so I went and it was like 6 a.m. and I had like green eyeshadow and eyeliner, and I just wanted to like feel good, I guess. I don't know. I was losing my mind probably, but they go in and they put it directly into the hole in my bone, and they were able to pull out from my rib bone a piece and then give it to the path lab, and they said, this is not cancer. But it took a couple of days, and it, you know, you're sitting in this like tension and this terror of, oh God, you know, I thought I was done. I just had Herceptin left, and then this could drag on for a long time, you know? Right. So I call it lucked out. I don't know what you'd call it really. I just, luckily it wasn't.
Yeah.
It was metastatic cancer. But that, I find that fear, even though with the type of all of the stuff I had to go through with all the treatments and everything, and that tamoxifen included, it's like, even with, I have a 98% survival rate, I guess it's 97.8. And I look at that and I'm like, that's so amazing. But it's still, I have that fear of what if it comes back, it could be there, or my body will make a new one. Do you have that? I find that I do.
You know, I would say that I had it more. I don't as much have that now. Yeah. I can't tell you what shifted. I don't know if it was just time, or just also a shift in my belief that, you know, we're all part of the universe. And even though we may not be here in our physical bodies, that we are still present.
Oh, that's pretty. It's beautiful to think that way. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I just, I don't know. I really can't tell you exactly what it was, but I don't live in that fear anymore. I mean, you know, even with going for my annual scans or, you know, anything like that. I don't know. Not anymore, but it's 13 years out. It's 13 years out. Yeah. You're still pretty early on.
Yeah, it has lessened. I think I'm doing 5 years of tamoxifen, and I'm coming to that. I have one more year left, and I'm like, okay, it'll be interesting to see where my brain goes at that point.
Yeah.
Do I have enough protection? I don't know. My doctors are like, you're fine. Don't worry.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard, and it's really hard when they start to let you go. Like it's one of those things where like, you know, oh, we don't need to see you for, you know, at 6 months, we need to see you now at 12 months. And you're like, hold up. Like, I like you. And, you know, I want to see you in 6 months. And, so it's hard. And when my radiation oncologist let me go completely, I was, you know, quite a mess, you know,
because really?
I was just like, oh my gosh. Like, well, I went in initially thinking like, oh yeah, you know, I've made it 5 years, I'm going to be let go. And then he was like, no, sorry. And I just kept going and going and going. And then I moved to Arizona, and the radiation oncologist here saw me once and was like, we don't need to see you again. And I was like, oh, I don't know how I feel about this.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a lot of different emotions that come up along with that stuff that, you don't even expect either, quite honestly.
Yeah, I didn't, like, I was severely depressed, and I didn't expect that to come up. I didn't even, that wasn't even something that I thought about with cancer treatment, because we always think, or at least for me, I always think of the movie version is what I call it, which is like bald and throwing up. And I didn't have either of those because I cold capped. So I kept my hair and I had all these anti-nausea pills and I was eating, like, for me, they said eat around the clock basically. So my stomach was really never empty. So I didn't have any of that like typical what people think of as cancer, the cancer look or version, you know, like yeah. whatever you idea of what cancer is. So yeah, with the depression, it was like, oh my God, I'm crying all the time. Why am I crying all the time? It was really hard. That was hard. Anxiety and depression was really what it was. And they put me on Effexor. Were you ever on that?
No, I refused all medication. Yeah. I mean, and you know, everybody's so different. And, you know, I just have always been one of those people that I've never been big into prescription medication. Mm-hmm. So when they, you know, I went in and I was talking to them and they were like, yeah, you know, we can put you on this antidepressant. And I was like, no. yeah. And, you know, or whatever medication. So no, I was not on, the only thing I did was tamoxifen.
Okay. Okay. Did you did chemo though too, right?
I did not.
Oh, it was radiation.
Yeah. Okay, radiation. Yeah. So I was part of a clinical trial. It was basically a computer that decided whether or not I had chemotherapy and it decided I did not.
Okay. Oh, is that, there's a name for there. There's a test you can do because
yeah,
I don't count for that. It doesn't count for me.
The Oncotype.
Oncotype, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So I did it, but I fell within like the intermediate range for recurrence.
Okay.
So that was the area where they didn't have enough information to say whether chemotherapy was effective or not effective. Like they knew for higher Oncotype, yes, they should do it. For lower Oncotype, they knew, not necessary. But that intermediate range, they were like, we don't really know. So that's why they started that clinical trial. And I just thought, well, you know, if I can do something to help somebody else who might fall in this range at a later time, then I'll do it. So even if they had come back and said, you know, you have to do chemotherapy, I would have done it. Like whatever they said, mm-hmm. I would have done.
Yeah. Yeah. It's hard because I was vegan and a marathon runner when this all started. And I was like, how could I get cancer? I don't understand. It's like this weird misconception of like, how would I get this? You know, cause I barely took Tylenol. I didn't take a lot of medications. Like I was fine. Like I was like, how can this happen? And then I just did what they told me and they're like this, you know, like you could do what you need is chemo. And I'm like, oh my God, I barely even take ibuprofen. And now I'm putting the most toxic thing in my body I could ever do. It's hard. They're hard decisions to make. So it really affected my mood and my, so they sent me to the psychologist at City of Hope. And then she recommended, she's like, it's really more anxiety that you're having. And a lot of patients when they're on chemo, this affects their, basically you don't have any serotonin in your brain or any endorphins really. So, Effexor will help with that, like kind of counter that. It helps with the hot flashes because it's going through medical menopause. So it did help. I'm slowly coming off of the Effexor now. So I've been on it to counteract tamoxifen, but I don't like to put a lot of stuff in my body. So I was like, if I can just kind of do it every other day now, so that when I stop the tamoxifen in a year, I can come off of it completely. That would be great.
Yeah. And I remember they did offer to me, because my hot flashes at the beginning were just insane. I know that they did offer it then too. And I was like, no, we'll find out, see what happens.
We'll see.
I'll go with it. So
I did a lot of acupuncture too. Yes. That helped. Mm-hmm. And I'm a runner. So I did run during all of my treatments. Obviously I got very slow, like my running slowed down and everything, but it helped because without that, I don't know, I was just so depressed, crying.
And I think it's typical. I mean, I don't think that it's atypical. And you know, I know that I did for sure. I mean, I wrote about it. It's definitely in my book where you know, I just, I mean, there were days where I would just pull the blankets over my head and I would just sob all day long.
Yeah.
Never moved, you know, and, but, you know, it's, people have to find their way in coping with that. You know, for me, one of the things I found was a support group, and it was an actual in-person support group at Gilda's Club in Pittsburgh. And I connected with those people, and it was more the young adult cancer survivors that I connected with. But, you know, I would say that they were mostly the reason why I was able to get through that aspect of the cancer diagnosis.
Yeah, I did WeSpark out here in LA and the young adult group, and they were, it was really nice. It was a nice group, really nice group of people. Very supportive. And I did my video journal, and then I wrote a lot down, and that actually is what became the show that I do. And I had a Caring, I still have it, but I don't really write much in it, but Caring Bridge, you know that?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Caring Bridge account, for private account with just like my family that they could read. And I had two really close friends. I had many friends that stepped up and they came over and they helped cold cap and things. But then ultimately, like, it was the friends that I was surrounded with that really got me through it. They like scraped me up off the floor and got me through, you know, like they showed up at my house. One of them showed up at the house and was like, I hear you. I was waiting to find out. I had found out that I had to do chemo, that I was HER positive, and then I had to officially really do chemo. And she just showed up at the house, and like, we just sat and we went through like different people. We researched different people who had gone through cancer treatment. And then we came up with the idea that to do like a nude photo shoot. So I don't know. I'm never going to look the same. I mean, at this point I was like showing everyone my boobs. I was like, look at them. They're so perfect. I can't believe I'm going to like, they're going to be different. And I'm actually grabbing my boobs right now, but
it happens like all the time, all the time. Like once you're diagnosed, it's like your hands cannot like I was groping myself constantly and it did not matter where I was. Like I was always feeling my boobs. I get it.
So I did a nude photo shoot and took like pre photos before. I haven't done after photos. I should. I'm curious to see. Obviously, now with the pandemic, I can't. But I could. Maybe I should do it because my body's changed a lot. You know.
Yeah.
From tamoxifen, I hold a lot of water weight and stuff. Do you find that with tamoxifen?
I had different side effects from tamoxifen. I did not gain a whole lot of weight from tamoxifen, but I know that there are a lot of people that do. But my major side effect that I think was it either created or just helped along endometriosis.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, I had horrible, horrible endometriosis, and it did not start until I started tamoxifen. Huh. At least the symptoms. I don't know if it was always there and it just, you know, kind of was silent. But after tamoxifen, like it was horrendous. And I lived with it for, I want to say it might've been like 4 years before I went to my gynecologist, and the nurse practitioner was like, I feel like we should send you to get checked for endometriosis. And it was pretty bad.
I had a friend that was diagnosed late with endometriosis, and she did have a hysterectomy and had to have a bunch of, I guess a lot of the scar tissue was there. She had all that removed and it's painful.
Yeah. Very painful. It's not anything that I would wish on anybody. I mean, not that breast cancer is either. Let's be clear on that. But endometriosis, it was awful. So you kind of mentioned, the show. So I definitely want to talk about that. So tell me a little bit, tell us a little bit about your show and how it, you know, what led you to that and where people can find some information.
Well, it's called Chemo Barbie. And I actually started it as a bunch of monologue. So it was a monologue that while I was in treatment, I wrote a monologue based on these three paintings. It was like a kind of a contest, and you just write a monologue. And so I wrote out what ultimately became the show. It was when I was diagnosed. So I wrote it out as a monologue, and I performed it at Samuel French in LA. And then I took it to a writing class, which was right next to WeSpark, the Cancer Support Center. And so that's they're a little related in that I started writing once I took it to this writer's group. I did the monologue, and she said, you know, you should make it into a show or make that into a scene. So I created a scene out of it. And then WeSpark Cancer Support Center had a talent show for all the, like around the holidays, they had a talent show for all patients if they wanted to do something. So I performed that monologue again. And then I just kept writing it, and it ultimately became Chemo Barbie. And the response was really interesting because it's other cancer patients that saw it, and they were like, you really should write this. It's like everyone's story, kind of, because even though it's not everyone has breast cancer, they can relate in different ways, because the show covers topics like mental health, fertility, young diagnosis, what we all go through, the trauma of cancer. So it's actually, it's a funny show, but it's also, you'll laugh and you'll cry. It's that kind of a show.
I feel like that's cancer in general. Yes. I mean, I feel like that's a cancer journey in general. Some laughter and some tears.
Yeah. And it was my journal entries, and it was my Caring Bridge account, and it was my YouTube videos. It's multimedia. So there are videos from when I was getting radiation, and I talk in one of the videos about what it's like to go through the first day and get, you know, the tape they put on you, and they mark you. And so that's in the show. And then I play about almost, it's like 35 characters. So it's a solo show. And I've traveled all over, traveled the world with it. I went to Scotland, Edinburgh Fringe Festival.
And it's my favorite place.
What did you say?
That's my favorite place, Edinburgh, Scotland. Yeah. So funny that you mentioned that place specifically. That's really cool. Super cool.
I did the 2018 festival, and I did like 27 performances in 28 days. So I had one day off. It was a really great experience, and it was also kind of like the best way to come out of cancer treatment, I would say, because you're taking something that's so awful, and I made it kind of work for me. I don't know. It's just.
Well, you said, so you came out, your final treatment was February of 2017. And so when did you start the show?
June 2017. So 3 months. Yeah. I was working on it in treatment. So I was going to my writing class. I still had my port, and my director, Jessica Lynn Johnson, was she holds a free writing class, and is literally a friend of mine brought me there, but it's next to WeSpark Cancer Support Center, which I was like, this is sort of like, is that the word kismet? You know, it's like meant to be.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just wrote the show, and I brought scene after scene, and I was working with her developing the show, taking what I had written and, you know, in my journals, and creating them into scenes, and then adding in different videos I did my YouTube. It's like a YouTube journal. So I kind of went through, and I was like, cold capping is in the show. And I have my cold capping, at the time I had, like, there's different types of cold capping, and the one I did, you had to change your cold cap every 15 minutes, and you carry this cooler with you with dry ice, and you have like 8 cold caps, and it's like this whole process. So you have people changing out your cold caps every 15 minutes. So it was either my husband or like my friends. And so that's in the show, like that center stage is this cold cap cooler. And I start there, and you hear a VO of my doctor talking about my diagnosis, which is actually him. They recorded the meeting, the 4-hour meet. I had a 4-hour meeting with my oncologist the first time I met him. And so that starts with that. And then I go into the diagnosis monologue, which has become a scene now that I play all the different characters. And it's been sort of, I had no idea that I would be doing a solo show about my cancer. And then I add in, like, I update it as I go through. So it's sort of this growing piece of work that I think helps me mentally too. You know?
Yeah, absolutely.
We ended up fostering a child and adopting her. And I talk about that. And now she's in the show a little bit, not her herself.
Yeah.
Photo of her. And so it's just like this, moving, growing piece of work that just grows as I go through treatment.
I love it. I mean, I think that's so cool. And, you know, through this podcast, I've gotten to meet some really amazing people. And, you know, some are just super talented, artistic, and, you know, some of the things that they've done with their story is just amazing. I mean, I have nothing other than to say other than it's just amazing. So obviously, you know, with COVID-19, just completely taking over 2020. Obviously, the shows are not happening in person, but, you know, kind of before we started recording, you did say that you will be doing a virtual show. So, do you want to share some information about that and where people can find that?
Sure. I'll be performing virtually. It's called Santa Monica Playhouse, and you can check out chemobarbie.com, and then on there I'll have the link once they give me the link to the virtual show on there. And I do have an Instagram account called Chemo Barbie, and I mean I have a private account too, but that's the show.
You don't have to give your private account away.
Right, my child is on the private account, but yes, Chemo Barbie, and then Chemo Barbie on Facebook as well. So that will have all the information for any upcoming virtual shows and any upcoming performances that hopefully 2021 will have some type of vaccine where we can go back out, but who knows, right?
Well, that's it. Yeah, I mean, it is quite honestly the year of the completely unknown.
Unprecedented times.
Oh my gosh. Yes.
I had a question for you about it. Did you end up using a surrogate?
I did not. I decided that, I had wrong information given to me, from my medical oncologist. He had told me that there was no possible way to check my eggs for the genetic mutation. And because this is probably one of the most emotional parts of my journey, is I just remember my mom sitting at the foot of my bed right as I was going in for my mastectomy and just the terror in her face. And I thought, I don't want to be in that seat. I don't want to have to watch my daughter go through what I went through. So, I didn't have the information to know, and, I didn't want to carry that weight of knowing that I passed on a genetic mutation.
Mm-hmm. I get that. Yeah. My husband has to be checked, and if he has anything, they'll have to go in the embryos and take out or turn off that code.
Yeah.
But if there's something that they can't do, you know, then it's like, I wouldn't want to put a kid through that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, again, it's a very personal decision. Everybody makes their own decision, and I'm not saying any way is right or wrong. I used to have a much stronger stance on it when I was younger. But you know, I've matured since then. I just recognize that everybody makes their own decision, and nobody's decision is right or wrong. It's just, you know, it's yours and you own it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
I'm asking a little because in the show I talk about that. Like, I talk about the fertility. I talk about what we all go through with that and our decisions and how we choose to go forward. You know, there's so many ways to become a, if someone wants to become a parent, there's so many different ways. So, right.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. So yeah. Thanks for asking.
Yeah. Oh, well. I always am curious.
It was a great question because we did talk about it. So, but Well, I just want to tell you that I have so enjoyed our conversation. I know we talked at length before we even started recording, but you are just delightful. I am so glad that we were able to connect and have you on the show. And I'm looking forward to watching your virtual show when it becomes available.
Oh, yeah. It's October. I forgot to say the date, didn't I? October 19th. So it's a Monday because they're doing every other days because of COVID. So they're letting the theater rest for 2 days in between, even though there's not going to be an audience, but there'll be the director, myself, and the tech who runs all my multimedia. So it's October 19th and they'll be running a live stream. So it's live, but it's virtual. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I can't wait to check it out.
Thank you.
For sure. So thanks again. I appreciate your time and, you know, just thank you for being on the podcast.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. It was really, really nice to meet a fellow survivor. Yeah. Chat with you and talk with you. So thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you for listening to this episode of Behind the Pink Ribbon. Don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. If you or anyone you know would be interested in sharing your story, please send an email to podcast@behindthepinkribbon.com.
Thinking about advertising on this podcast? Our ads not only create awareness for your brand, but also contribute to the continued growth and support of this show. Email us today and be on our next episode. Email podcast@behindthepinkribbon.com for more information. You've been listening to Behind the Pink Ribbon, produced by American Creative Consulting, mixed and mastered at Riverview Podcasting Studios. For more information, please visit designbyacc.com.